Oh, Sundance, I've got some dynamic, fantastic zombie takeout for you, if you're interested. What's up? Welcome to episode 313 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got quite a bit of listeners submitted. This is a voicemail from Bodo.
Hey, Bodo here. Hey, I'll call you guys out on one thing. As far as Bishop versus Data, Data always wanted to be more human-like, and Bishop was definitely more human-like. So, as far as the aliens go, the next one is supposed to be a hell of a lot more explosions, more aliens, more fighting and stuff like that. They're supposed to come out with two more after that. Actually, he has seven more after that that he's planning, but he already wrote our Covenant's coming out. He already wrote the next one, so... The Covenant is supposed to be a hell of a lot more aliens, more explosions, more than Prometheus. So it should be a hell of a lot better. So don't get too down on it. Anyway, glad to hear you guys back. Love the show. Later.
Thanks, Bodo. So this is going to be more of an action movie, Covenant, which, you know, better than Prometheus, I suppose. Although I have to revisit Prometheus. I can't quite remember why I didn't like it. With regard to Bishop and Data, that's a very good point. Bishop was pretty much human.
Yeah, but Data was looking for those life forms.
No.
You should just put Prometheus on our list then.
By the way, every time we get a voicemail, we get this sort of automatic voice to text transcript of it that is hilariously bad usually. But
oh yeah,
particularly Bodo. It's come up as Bucko, Moto, Photo, Poto. I wish I could, post it somewhere, all the different variations of your name.
It's a lot like when my mother-in-law leaves a message and it's translated because she has a very thick Scottish accent. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
But I also left two other voicemails that I'm going to be a little lazy and not edit in. But he mentioned the upcoming Moral Panic trilogy and said that he could only remember Reefer Madness, didn't remember the other two movies that we had scheduled. And he suggested one called Mazes and Monsters.
Goddamn right.
That's already on the list. That's the second of the Moral Panic movies. The third is...
I cannot wait for that movie, honestly. Yeah.
And the second is Death Car on the Freeway. But
which we kind of, I mean...
It's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
And Bodo, in his third voicemail, suggested a movie that I think we might want to replace it with.
All right.
Glenn or Glenda.
Whoa.
It's a, transvestism, moral panic movie.
Yeah. Is that Ed Wood?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
I think that's replacing Death Car on the Freeway.
Yeah. So I don't even know if we can find it, but...
Well, I'm sure we can find Glenn or Glenda. It's pretty well known. Thanks for the suggestions, Beto. A little more listener submitted, about our Aliens review. I was chatting with Lush Bunny, who left a comment on last week's, or on the 1984 episode. And she knows Aliens really well. We were chatting about it. And she pointed out that we did watch the director's cut.
Okay.
And that everything that was cut for the theatrical version, or not everything, but most of what was cut for the theatrical version was in that first half.
Oh, thank God, because holy shit, that was just way too long.
Yeah, all the padding was in that first half.
That might have gotten five for me.
Same here. Also, we apparently missed a 2001 reference or two, and I missed a science nitpick that as soon as she pointed it out, I was horribly embarrassed about. The scene where the ship drops out of the mothership, the main ship. It's falling in space. It's falling... in a vacuum with no gravity. It shouldn't do that.
No.
I'm a little embarrassed that I didn't notice that.
Well, we're not like seasoned space travelers.
Well, yeah.
And that might shock some people.
Yeah. And it's a credit to the movie that I was so into it that I overlooked that, I guess. And one last bit of listener submitted in reference to the trailer for this week's movie. Danny Meeks on Google Plus said, "More trauma, please."
Agreed.
Damn right.
That's goddamn right.
Which very nicely brings us to this week's movie, which is from 1986, Class of Nukem High. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Tromaville Nuclear Utility, celebrating 60 days without an... Oops, make that 0 days.
And also brought to you by New Jersey. Want to shoot the former Secretary of the Treasury? Want to chill out with some nuclear waste? Come visit New Jersey.
Hmm.
All right, so we have pretty much your average high school that just happens to be located near a nuclear power plant. Because, you know, Jersey's a very small state, and things are located very closely to each other in Jersey.
My high school was next to the county prison.
I was just going to say, how far was your high school from the nuclear power plant?
Well, my grade school was actually just down the road a ways, but my high school was right next to, literally, next to the county prison. This actually, you know, radiation stuff aside, was actually one of the more realistic depictions of high school in the 80s that came out of 80s movies.
Well, The Road Warrior gang and stuff?
Well, I mean, everybody else. You know, you didn't have the you know, idealized cliques and, you know, everybody in, you know, dressed, you know, in you know, thousands of dollar clothing.
You know, you're right.
Not everybody was cool.
True. True, even, like, who should have been the cooler kids weren't really cool, because, you know. Alright, so, yes, it just happens to be located near a nuclear power plant, and what's the worst that could happen? apparently, the current governor of New Jersey had a job running a nuclear power plant back in this day.
Interesting, he kind of looks like the guy in the movie that was running it.
Doesn't give a wet fart what you think. Anyway, I don't know why they repeated that line twice. Yeah,
it's trauma.
Alright, so what had happened was the radiation, of course, started leaking into the fallout shelter, which they kept using that word. I'm not sure they understood what it meant.
Also, they stored toxic waste in the fallout shelter.
Yes. So they're the preppy kids, the debate club, before this movie began, which, I mean, I smell prequel, some turned into these mutant kids, pretty much straight out of the Road Warrior.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, they were dealing drugs and they get expelled and, they vow to take vengeance on the school. And create a fake nuclear emergency to get the school evacuated. And, well, meanwhile, our heroes, they're not star-crossed lovers. They're just, you know, popular girl, cheerleader, jock, you know, kind of timid about, you know, their relationship, which is refreshing to see in the movie, too. Like, they're not just like, well, they're not people of the world.
Well, until...
Until, of course, well, they don't get dosed. They smoke up, and there's
the weed just happened to have been grown very close to the nuclear power plant.
Nuclear weed, and they wind up having a nuclear love child, and hilarity ensues.
Yeah, the child grows up to be, well, something interesting.
Well, and I thought that was, I mean. It's very late in the movie, of course, but I thought that would be a great reason for the creature to have stayed away from them.
Yeah.
At first I thought, oh, you know, why wouldn't he have any interest in them? And then I'm like, wait a minute, they're his parents.
Yes.
So actually, he may not have even been going to harm her.
Right.
You know.
That's true.
Towards the climax.
Incidentally, the monster is never seen in a full shot because the entire costume was never finished. They only had bits and pieces used as a puppet.
You didn't need the whole outfit.
No, I think it was better. The face was fantastic, by the way.
It was. All of it was fantastic, really.
And staying with the makeup work and the sort of special effects work, the makeup job on the Cretans, that's the gang who used to be the Honors Club,
yes,
was kind of hilariously bad.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like they did it themselves.
Yeah. But they didn't have, you know, actual bizarre haircuts. They just were wearing these obvious wigs,
right,
and just painted faces. One of them has enormous nose rings, two of them, like septum piercings.
And then after they get ripped out, in one scene, he comes back with more.
Mm-hmm. He's also got these dentures in, even though his teeth are still there. At one point, they fall out of his mouth, and they're just hanging from one of the rings. I would love to know if that was intentional or not.
Oh, I think a lot of his shtick was intentional.
Oh, yeah, probably. And on the positive side, in terms of makeup and costuming and all that, the bunny suits were probably the most legit costuming I've ever seen in a trauma film. Everyone who works at the nuclear facility has these bunny suits on, the white exposure suits. I've never seen such, you know, realistic looking costuming in a trauma film.
Well, maybe they knew somebody. Maybe it was just easy to get the uniforms.
Yeah, probably just easy to get them from like a uniform supply shop or something. Another thing I love about this movie is it wastes no time on buildup.
Nah.
It's pedal to the metal from go, practically.
The weird thing is the soundtrack on it.
Mm.
But it's also an awesome thing about the movie, too, at the same time. It's really strange.
It's basically hair metal and new wave.
Well, it's just the mix of the soundtrack, too. Like, I think they kind of did this in movies, you know, teen movies, where they had songs playing throughout for no reason at all. Almost so low that you couldn't even hear them.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I mean, but you have like the Oingo Boingo facsimile doing the title track.
Yeah.
But then the club scene.
Oh, yeah. I just have the name in my notes with like five exclamation points. Smithereens in the party scene. In 86, I think this was before
their
first album.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that was like 88.
Okay. Yeah. I think I was like 16 when that came out. Yeah. I saw this a few months ago, maybe over the summer, and I like literally cheered when I got to that scene because I had no idea they were in the movie.
I was like, why hadn't anyone told me this feature in this fucking movie? I would have watched this years ago if someone said smithereens were in this. Uh-huh. They're saying 87.
For, especially for you?
The song Blood and Roses.
Yeah. That was off especially for you. Yeah.
Featured on an episode of Miami Vice.
Which is when they became well known.
Think about it.
It was a little before then.
To go from Troma to Miami Vice. And of course, people like to laugh about Miami Vice now.
But it was big back in the day.
Huge fucking show back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. And smithereens are from Jersey, so they probably just knew somebody.
Yeah. I mean, it was Pat DiNuzio. Without the goatee.
Yeah. And without playing guitar. I think it's the only time I've seen him just sing. Now, on the negative side, the Belushi clone irritated the hell out of me, and I kept waiting for him to die.
Belushi clone.
Which one was Eddie, I think his name was. He was the party animal.
Oh, every movie had that, though.
Yeah, he was basically just a Belushi impression. And they had to go with the trope.
Well, yeah, because they hit all the tropes.
Yeah.
And they hit them, and they were definitely winking when they hit each other.
Yeah.
There was no accident.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if the sort of gender-bent Cretan with the guy with the breasts.
Yeah.
Was he a reference to Rocky Horror? Because he looked just like a Transylvanian.
He did. I'm not sure if that's what that was about.
I would love to know if that was just an accident or if they were trying to get him to look like a Transylvanian.
Who knows what their thought process was behind any of that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a lot of random shit. I mean, the guy had like chicken makeup on.
Right.
They were just whatever came out of their heads.
Yeah, this is classic trauma, right up there with Toxie and Kabuki, man.
Yeah. You know, it was on the fence until I think it was the throat punch.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. Now I know which side I'm on. You had me at the throat punch.
Warren, the jock, after the radioactive weed, he kind of becomes a bit of a monster off and on, which is weird. And he and he attacks a couple of the Cretans because they harassed his girl. He decks him, basically punches him to death, and then rams his fist down his throat, one of the Cretans' throats. And his throat like expands and almost bursts because of it. It's a classic trauma effect gag. Also loved the Three Stooges joke.
Oh, you got that too? Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, yeah. Dr. Howard.
Well, I also saw it in the trivia, but I would have heard it a mile away.
Fire. Oh, boy. Yeah, I was wondering about that. I mean, they were just slipping. There's so many things that you can watch this a few times and definitely catch new things.
Incidentally, the original title was simply Nuke'em High. It was later changed in the hopes of people mistaking it for Class of 1984. So they didn't change it to make it different from another movie. They changed it to confuse people. Troma was the original Asylum.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. Asylum, definitely.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There would be no Asylum without Troma.
Mm-hmm. And this is probably the best acted Troma film I've seen. Which isn't exactly saying much. I mean, it's Troma, but...
Honestly, the one thing that really pissed me off was that knowing Janelle Brady did not have a career after this.
Yeah, the girlfriend?
Yes. Yeah. She should have at least had Kim Cattrall's career. Come on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she looked just like her.
Mm-hmm.
First off.
Also, one of the other cast members, Lauren Heather McMahon, who played Taru in one scene... her role was originally a lot bigger, but she had a car accident, and her part in other scenes was played by other characters, which is why this character, who, you know, they think so highly of the Cretans, just shows up in this one scene.
Right. They're like, I know someone with red hair that would be really interested. I'm like, what the fuck are they talking about?
She was going to be in a lot more of the movie, but she had a car accident, and her lines were given to other people.
And I love how they just left it in.
Yeah.
Bother changing it. It's the first time we're seeing her.
And that was the only scene solely directed by Richard W. Haynes, who co-directed the film with Lloyd Kaufman, although Lloyd Kaufman was working under the pseudonym Samuel Weil for some reason.
Why did he have that scene over?
I don't know. They divided up the movie, I guess, and he took that scene. Maybe Lloyd wasn't available that day.
Now, was it just that scene, or was it like the intercut motorcycle things?
I maybe. Don't know. I think it was probably just the Taro stuff.
And like that motorcycle's riding around inside the building. I think that was like stolen by that Brian Bosworth movie just a couple of years later,
And speaking of underused actors, the kind of curmudgeonly guy in the bunny suit who discovers the toxic waste in the basement.
Love his
character. Wish there had been more.
He should have had a movie himself.
I knew going in that he was going to die in the scene, and it was just so sad because I wanted more with this guy.
I just love the cluelessness.
And he was just so jaded and over it. And then this monster shows up.
He sticks his hand in. Well, you know, if he didn't die then, he was just going to die later.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on.
He was an obvious red shirt.
Did he need to go through years of chemo and...
Mm-hmm. And you know, along the lines of people who should have been red shirts, how did Eddie know how to operate a laser? How did the idiot party animal know how to work a laser?
You know what I have in my notes, right?
Hmm?
Will Uncle John talk about Chekhov's laser?
No, I actually decided not to bring it up this time. I mean, I have it in my notes, but I always hit that point, so... I wasn't going to bring it up.
Because Troma knows Chekhov too, apparently.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about the Moral Panic trilogy earlier with Buddha's voicemails. This actually could have fit into it.
It could have.
Because, you know, back in the day, there was a lot of panic about nuclear power. And this is totally playing into all of that.
Is it more about nuclear power or is it about the decline of our civilization or society at the same time?
It's more about nuclear power because they say the high school was perfectly normal until the power plant opened up.
True.
And the weed specifically, because I really had to think about the weed angle, if it was a little anti-drug, but the weed was grown on the property of the power plant. So it was all of the problems were because of the power plant.
All right. Because, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, the country doesn't mean anything anymore, nobody cares kind of thing.
True.
I mean, they were definitely playing with the Teen Rebel movie.
Of course. And this one features my favorite, I'll say trauma trope, or kind of staple of trauma films, the random running crowds. That they totally took from Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, but I love it when trauma does it. Because you can tell it's just like 20 people they pulled off the street and just said, run in this direction screaming.
I could have sworn they had like a director or somebody was accidentally in one of the shots.
Oh, yeah. One of the producers, Michael Herz, he appears earlier in the film. I forget the role, but it's the only time he's ever been on screen in a trauma film.
I don't think the guy was supposed to be on camera, though. Uh-huh. I think they were running, and this guy is kind of standing in the hallway, like, directing where people need to go. The camera was back too far. He's only in it for, like, a second or two. And, of course, there's so much going on, you wouldn't notice, but...
Right.
Yeah. You do notice, like, one dude standing there dressed in, like, a long coat and, like, you know... Not like a high school student or a teacher. And yeah, he just disappears.
And of course, at the end, the monster isn't dead.
Of course not.
It's a nice little sequel.
Does that bring us to sequels and remakes?
Yeah, you stepped on my segue, but okay. The film spawned two unsuccessful sequels, 91's Class of Nukem High 2, Subhumanoid Meltdown, and 94's Class of Nukem High 3, The Good, the Bad, and the Subhumanoid. A fourth movie was announced in 2000, but never got past the pre-production stage. The sequels were not directed by either Kaufman or Michael Herz, but were produced by them. They were more comedic than violent and had good production values despite the low budget. The sequels marked the first appearance of Tromi, the radioactive squirrel. I'm kind of curious, but if they're not really proper trauma films in this same sense, I think I'd want to skip them.
And like I said, I would love to see a prequel about the debate team.
There isn't going to be a prequel as far as I know, but a fourth installment of the series called Return to Class of Nukem High Volume 1, directed by Kaufman, was released in January of 2014. So there's a proper sequel. On April 7th, 2010, Kaufman announced that he had been contacted about remaking Class of Nukem High. Kaufman has already confirmed that other 80s trauma classics, such as The Toxic Avenger, which will have a PG-13 rating, and Mother's Day, will also receive remakes by other studios. As of 2013, the Toxie remake has yet to be produced, but a Mother's Day remake was released by Anchor Bay in 2011. A PG-13 Toxie.
Hey, who the fuck's going to see a PG-13 Toxie?
No. And if they're going that direction, don't remake Class of Nukem High either.
No. I mean, this had everything. This, I mean, they did The Animal House. They did Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Mm-hmm. They did Rebel Without a Cause. Yeah. They did, Blackboard Jungle. they did them all. And to throw that with, like, radioactivity.
Yeah. That's why this one is up there with Toxie and Kabuki Man as, you know, Troma's crown jewels, so to speak.
Yeah, I wonder, though, if the radiation isn't, you know, a metaphor in itself. I mean...
Interesting. I don't know if Lloyd goes that deep, but, well, no, actually, I could see him going that deep.
This kind of seems like it could have been.
Yeah.
Because there are a number of things about, you know, the fabric of society sort of state in there.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it was technology in general, maybe it's radioactivity itself, but there's definitely that feeling of, you know, which is weird coming from them, you know?
Yeah, like, I was just going to say that. It's odd coming from a trauma film, but that's really interesting. Gives me an excuse to watch it again. On the Brains? Yeah,
definitely on the Brains.
It's classic trauma with all of the things I come to trauma for, and it parodies, like you said, every high school movie. I gotta go 5.
Yeah, I was probably down at 4.5, but I'm giving it half a brain just for having the smithereens, so
yeah.
5 for me as well.
All right, and what have we learned?
We learned that those ID badges just don't taste that good.
And I learned that falling into toxic waste may make you a superhero, but drinking it really just turns you into a suicidal zombie, and smoking it just leads to even worse.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so until next time when we'll be reviewing Bad Ben, I've been looking forward to this one.
Oh, yes.
It just looks incredibly bad in the best possible way.
It's like we're back. You know, this last, I don't know how many weeks we've done.
Really good movies, like legit good movies.
Very strange.
Yeah.
You know, a BDSM trilogy.
Well, that too, yeah. And not so legit good, not so good movies, but yeah, not quite our wheelhouse. Yeah, the Trauma Bad Ben, this is home. Hence the title of this episode.
Yeah.
Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Also, if you enjoyed the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but more would be better. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. I just added a couple more. Lush Bunny recommended Gothic, and I think there was another one that we talked about that I threw on there just after Beastmaster. I can't remember what it was, though.
And we should add Prometheus, too, I think, if it's not on there already.
Okay. I just said I want to revisit it, so why not?
Right, you're talking about wanting to revisit it. You might as well do it for the show.
Yeah, and it is a notoriously bad movie, too.
Yeah.
All right, I'll throw it on. You'll also find...
about not having to get to this for, like, months anyway.
Oh, yeah, true. You'll also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear a review, please leave it on the request form. And, of course, the recommendations list. It's classic trauma. There was no way it wasn't going on the rec list.
Like I said, I was on the fence.
It might not have gotten a 5. I wasn't sure about that, but I knew it was going to the rec list.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I was hovering in the 4s.
Yeah, I was too until the end. The Smithereens and the Throat Punch and just all of the classic schlocky, gory beauty of trauma.
Yeah.
That this packs in. You can email us zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 401-403-68-ZT01 or for the alphanumerically challenged.
I give a wet fart about the oven.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
Get your gluteus maximi out of here.
Was actually one of the most realistic, you know, radiation stuff aside, realistic depictions of high school in the 80s.
What?
I'll take that whole thing again.